Revival, the Sam Bush Story, is new to Amazon, and its co-director, Wayne Franklin, joins me from Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Craig. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm excited to talk to you. I'm always excited to talk about or with Sam Bush, one of my favorite musicians. The commentary you got about him from colleagues, young and old, certainly resonated with me, and feel, you know, just he's universally beloved. And that's not always the case with musicians that people admire. There's a lot of heroes who people have a bit of, you know, emotional distance from. We even speak of Bill Monroe as somebody who could be, you know, be warm or not so warm. And it's not like people have the warm fuzzies for Bill Monroe. But why do you think they do for Sam Bush?
You know, Jeff Austin actually addresses this really well in the film. And he talks about the fact that Sam is always willing to put himself out there, to be generous, to accept invitations to play on the stage with these younger acts, to share what he knows. And Jerry Douglas addresses it in the film as well. It's a generational thing. The older generation that inspired them, they were a little bit protective of their knowledge. They didn't really want to necessarily pass it along to the next generation. They were sort of territorial about it. But with Sam and Jerry and Bela and all of those guys, it's important to them that they share what they know, that they point people in the right direction. Here's how you learn. Here's what you need to be playing. And they want to see it grow. They want to see it continue and evolve and see people taking chances with the music the same way they have.
Yeah, and Sierra Hull seems to be one of your main characters who reflects that.
Yeah, it's such a wonderful little moment we have with her in there, too. That was a nice discovery.
Well, tell me a bit about your background as a filmmaker and as a follower of bluegrass music and what led you and your partner to make the movie.
Well, it's a bit of a winding path. As far as being a filmmaker, honestly, I made that decision when I was 7 years old. I walked into a theater and saw the words "A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away," and I was hooked from there. So I'm literally one of those guys of that Star Wars generation, and that's the reason I decided then as a child that that's what I wanted to do. It really struck me that there are people who this is their job to tell stories for a living and do it in such a powerful and impactful way. Never really gave up on that. Went to the University of Alabama, studied filmmaking as much as I could there in the early 90s. They have a much better program now. And I've been in Birmingham ever since. And, you know, being in a town like Birmingham, it's not a mainstream film town. So, you know, you do the indie thing. You work and you pay your bills doing commercials and whatever you can find. And then everything else is a passion project. I've been very fortunate, though, because I've been able, especially since Chris and I have hooked up, which started 10 years or so ago, we've knocked out 3 feature-length documentaries now and are currently working on the 4th and have some other projects in various stages of development at this point.
Were there any other music movies in that collection of documentaries?
Yeah, there were. Actually, the 3 feature-length documentaries that we've done have all been music documentaries to this point, which is what led us to Sam. When I first started working with Chris several years ago, he was working on a project that was then called Bayou Country. And it was a fascinating tale about this one song that kind of weaved through all these different musicians' lives. And as we got into it, we realized we were telling too many stories, so it actually broke up and became 2 different films. One literally was all material rescued from the cutting room floor, and it was about sort of an upstart bluegrass band down on the coast of Florida called Dred Clampett. So little did we know at that time, really, that Sam was a big influence on those guys and was sort of a mentor to them. The second film that we made that came out of that big sprawling project was a film called Duke and the King. And it was about a guy named Duke Bardwell. Duke is one of those guys that when you hear speak of him, people speak of him, it's always reverent. It's always in these tones of, oh man, Duke should have been famous. And so we wanted to tell that story of that guy who should have been famous, but every step along the way, something went wrong. He just never quite got there. He was always just outside the spotlight. And a lot of the film also deals with his relationship with Elvis. Elvis was his childhood hero. And you talk about those heroes that maybe aren't so nice once you get to know them. Well, he worked with Elvis for a couple of years, did, I don't know, 150-some tour dates with him, and was the relationship didn't end well. It ended very poorly, in fact. So dealing with that and the aftermath the feelings that created in Duke, especially after Elvis had died and not being able to resolve that, It basically led him to give up music altogether. And then this song that he had written many moons earlier came back around to him in a most serendipitous way and brought him back into playing music just for the love of it. Well, we told that story and premiered at the Nashville Film Festival in 2013. And one of our goals, and he didn't know it at the time, was to have Sam there. Sam is a friend of Duke's, and they, you know, have both sort of mentored Dred Clampett through the years. So it was important to us to have Sam there because that was the guy whose story we wanted to tell next. And we needed to convince Sam that we could do it. And lo and behold, Sam really enjoyed what we did with Duke's story and was open to talking to us. And it took a little while, a little convincing to get him and Lynn to... I think he trusted us with the storytelling. At first, I don't know that he actually believed his story was worth telling, which is shocking to me. He just felt like he wasn't as interesting of a character as Duke was. But, you know, our pitch was this. When you're an iconoclast, when you're the kind of person who defies the rules and is determined to succeed on your own terms, you're always going to have an interesting story. Those are the kinds of stories we love to tell. So
Can you describe kind of a bit about getting, you know, on the front end and getting clear on some of the more difficult chapters of his life and how deep you'd go and how willing Sam and Lynn were to go there, whether his cancer or his breakup of the Bluegrass Alliance? You know, no documentary about a musician ought to be just the happy parts, right?
No, and it can't be, not if it's going to be interesting, and especially if we want to appeal beyond the warm market. You know, the hardcore Sam Bush and Newgrass Revival fans were going to see this thing regardless, and we knew that. But our job as storytellers is to do something that anyone can watch and take something from, even people who've never heard Sam Bush's name before. So we took that very seriously, and it was a gradual process. You know, we once Sam was open to the idea of exploring this thing, we went to Merlefest. We shot a little bit of stuff behind the scenes, things that never really made it into the film even. And then from there, we shot a few interviews. We went to Telluride. And then that summer, we sat down. And, you know, the very first thing we did was we recorded a 7-hour audio-only interview with Sam just to capture every little piece of his story, knowing that a lot of what we talked about, most of that audio, I don't think maybe a sentence of that audio got into the film. But that was the basis upon which we built our story structure. So we sat down that summer after shooting those few things, putting together a little sizzle reel of the film to prove, yeah, this can work. And we mapped out the story beats. We knew exactly what our story was going to be moving forward, and we would shoot very strategically to achieve that. I still have the whiteboard in my office here in my house where we mapped out all those story beats. And every time we would feel the story starting to get off the rails a little bit, we would just go back to those to that beat sheet and go, okay, this is where we need to be. And sure enough, every time we went back to the beat sheet in the edit, that's when things really started to clear up and it all made sense. We presented that to Sam and Lynn at some point. And here, you know, here's basic story structure, how it works, and here's how perfectly your story aligns with this. And I think once we did that over dinner at their house one night, it really clicked with them. Okay, yeah, this makes sense. And we understand why we need to go there. We know why we need to talk about Lonnie Pierce and Bluegrass Alliance, why we need to talk about how painful it was as Newgrass Revival broke up, you know, why we need to talk about the struggles of trying to play at some of these festivals where people didn't want us because we had long hair or they heard bad things about us. Because no victory is as sweet if it's not overcoming some sort of a setback, some sort of a failure earlier on.
And one of the early pivot points that you make a big deal about, and there's a great photograph that goes with it, is Sam turning down Roy Acuff's offer of a job. And there's a little backstory with Sam Bush's dad knew Roy Acuff and helped Sam make his Grand Ole Opry debut with on Roy Acuff's set. And so there was some affection there and some respect, but then Acuff offers him a gig, and then what happens?
Well, you know, and it's interesting how that had come about. Basically, Sam and his father would just go down there and go to the Opry. They would go and see Mr. Acuff and all these other musicians play across the street at Ernest Tubb Record Shop. And then eventually, Sam's dad just was one of those guys that never met a stranger and just boldly started talking to these guys and going, you know, my son's a fiddle player. And so they've started becoming aware of Sam, and we unfortunately couldn't really delve deeply into this. But Sam would join in with those guys, and they would play after the Opry over on at the record shop. And so he got to know them in that way. And that's how he sort of won them over as a fiddle player and then ended up being put on the Opry. But with Sam, you know, he was going to succeed on his own terms. He wanted to make the music that he wanted to make. And he had that offer. He could have very easily gotten in, you know, great inroads into the Nashville establishment through Mr. Acuff, but he just couldn't see himself doing that. And at 18 years old, that's a bold choice to turn down what seems to be a sure ticket to do things on your own terms. But when has Sam not done that, really?
Well, the detail on Newgrass Revival was real helpful to me. I know the story, but it really helped kind of timeline it and the various comings and goings as it transitions from version 1.0 to the version that got signed to a major label deal, and the strife that were the tensions that were almost inevitable with that in the quartet that involved Bela Fleck and John Cowan and Pat Flynn. It was really fascinating. It's an amazing story, and that seems to have been, in a way, looking, if I took the whole thing in a gulp, you know, like the Newgrass Revival seems to be the chapter of Sam's life that meant the most to you, that you felt had the most to say. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. And I think just structurally, that's where Sam learned the most, you know, in terms of story structure. You know, you're always looking at, all right, here are the beginnings before your hero goes out on a journey. Then what are all the struggles that they face? What are the good times and the bad times? And what lessons do they take from that to lead to, you know, what would be a resolution? And so Sam learned the most, I think, through that period with Newgrass Revival, and it helped to determine who he is today and the music that he plays today. I had been a Newgrass Revival fan from back in my college years, and I was not an avid bluegrass fan at that time. I have really become much more so in the last 10 years or so. But I always wondered what happened to those guys, but I never really, you know, this was pre-internet. You couldn't just look this stuff up and find out, you know, what happened to that amazing band that I was listening to. So for me, that was, I was fascinated to dig deeper into that, to determine what had happened. And, you know, we were careful in the film, purposely so, to not really lay blame on any one member. Because to this day, I still don't know who you would blame. Even after going through the process of telling the story, it's just a question of four very strong personalities and a couple of whom were just tired of what they were doing. Bela had a vision for something that he wanted to achieve. And it just, you know, as happens when you get people who are visionaries like that all working together, there's going to come a point where everybody just wants to do their own thing and head off in different directions. And I think it's amazing that they stuck together the way they did and created the music they did. It just didn't work out timing-wise with the market, you know.
So I was hoping to see, I'd love to, this is kind of one of those archive diving documentary questions where you're always hoping you'll find that magic film, but the early Newgrass Revival and especially the iteration that toured with Leon Russell, is there any concert footage? There's not much to go on except for a few TV appearances, and I'm wondering if you were able to find anything that you were not able to clear, or if that you think that there's a dry well there.
It is pretty dry. We were shocked, actually. The few appearances that they made on KET, Kentucky Public Television, that was sort of it. Couldn't really find anything else. You know, there's the concert film that's out there that Leon Russell released when he was touring with them. Otherwise, no. I mean, it was tough to find recordings that, you know, were not the actual released albums. It was tough to find photos. It's just that stuff is a lot more scarce than you would think. It's a shame, really, because I really love some of those early incarnations of the band.
The breakup of Newgrass Revival in your version leads pretty straightforwardly to the Sam Bush Band. The one chapter that I was looking for that I think is missing here is the Strength in Numbers group. Strength in Numbers with Bela, and it was a brief run, but they released one album, which I think, and have, you know, asked many people, younger players in the music scene and in acoustic music and string band music, really one of the most influential albums of all time in modern bluegrass, the all instrumental with Mark O'Connor, and extraordinary record. Tell me what you know about that and why it didn't appear in the movie.
Well, we've been asked this a number of times, and it was something we struggled with when we were in the edit. Yeah. But as we talked to Sam about his story, and we talked about the period of his life between Newgrass Revival and founding the Sam Bush Band and what the influences were that brought him there. He kept coming back to his time with Emmylou Harris and the Nash Ramblers and his brief stint with the Flecktones. Strength in numbers was never really a factor, at least not from the stories he told us, in what led him to that decision. And just in the structure of the story and the story we were trying to tell, we needed to get to the point where we're seeing Sam, the mentor, start to arise. We're seeing Sam, the guy who is influencing Chris Thiele and Sierra Hull and Green Sky Bluegrass and Steep Canyon Rangers and all these other artists that we have in the film. And Strength in Numbers, while everybody reveres that band and the music was incredible and, you know, you can't get a better lineup of musicians, it just didn't come up in terms of the narrative. And, you know, it's a hard choice that we had to make. There are other things that we left out. Sam's early work recording with the act they called Poor Richard's Almanac. You know, it was sort of groundbreaking at the time, and it was the thing that started to get Sam on people's radar. A lot of those things, unfortunately, we just had to leave out because we had to make a choice of, are we going to tell a compelling narrative, or are we going to make a catalog of Sam's career? And with a career as varied as Sam's is, the catalog option was going to get really boring really quickly because you still need to get people captured emotionally. So that was a tough sacrifice, and that was honestly the hardest one to make. But it just, as we were delving into the story, it just didn't come up that much.
One aspect that you did spend a nice amount of focus on that I thought was really insightful, and I don't think that a lot of other filmmakers would have zeroed in on, was Sam's rhythm playing and the commentary about that. And I'm curious what kind of compelled you to zoom in, because it's kind of the most musicological observation, and I think it's really key.
Well, and it's funny, too, because neither Chris nor I are musicians. I mean, I played music in high school, you know, did the high school marching band and concert band and played keyboards in some rock bands just long enough to figure out that I was not talented. I was just smart enough to fake it for a while. But I think that aspect of musicality has never really left me. You know, studying music for all those years in my youth, the way it comes out now is in my editing and the way I approach structuring a story or just the rhythm of an edit. So I try to bring some musicality into what I do as a filmmaker. So that fascinated me. The fact that, you know, so often guys who are great at rhythm don't get the credit that they should get, especially when they can play an instrument like a mandolin or like a fiddle that can really shine in solos. When you hear all of these fantastic musicians going, yeah, he's amazing, but it's his rhythm that nobody else can duplicate. And you, right, you start listening to the music and you realize, yeah, okay, nobody else does sound like that. Nobody else can create the sounds that he does. And as Jeff Austin says in the film, it's not an effect, it's a gift, you know, and one guy gets that. So if all of these fantastic musicians think it's important enough to mention, then it's definitely worth delving into and figuring out what makes it so different.
As we wrap up here, tell me what you see going forward. You confront, and Lynn is candid, and she's candid when you meet her in person, about, you know, the ongoing challenges of keeping Sam at the top of everybody's minds for bookings and protecting his legacy, expanding on that legacy, kind of converting that legacy and the respect that you document in the movie into an ongoing active artist career. You film him recording the album, which I'm pretty certain became Storyman, right?
Yes. Yes, it did.
Yeah. And that's been out since 2016. Of course, the world will be looking for a new Sam Bush album before too long. To the degree that weaves together with the fate of the future of the film, that would be interesting too. But where do you see Sam and his world going based on your experience with him?
Well, Sam will never age because we're pretty convinced he's a vampire. So he'll be playing for the next 100 years from what I've seen. We feel like Sam is that important to the history of American music that people need to know who he is. And to the extent that this film can do that, keep him top of mind in terms of him getting bookings and playing in front of more and bigger audiences. Would love to see the guy show up in some Hall of Fame inductions soon here. If we can do that, if this film can help people recognize the importance of his contribution, then I think we've done our job. And it's been fun to see people who really didn't know anything about the music, didn't know anything about Sam, who are now, because of the film, avid Sam Bush fans and buying all of his albums. And I just hope we can get thousands more to do the same thing.
Wayne Franklin, I appreciate the time. It's a great film.
Oh, thank you very much. It has been a pleasure to work on and a pleasure to talk to you.